Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio. And my very special guest is John Lebang. It's French for dynamite.
That's
John,
right.
Welcome to the program.
Greetings from the People's Republic of Michigan.
The People's Republic of Michigan?
Yeah.
Have they already been sold out to the Chinese due to the economic crisis? Is that what you're getting at?
Definitely.
Yeah, sounds about right.
Yep. I'm telling you, when I'm sitting here, I'm watching the game between Putin and Obama here. Do you see the recent news here? Well, I guess
somebody needs to get them like some badminton rackets and a shuttlecock, you know, they could duke it out.
Something like that. This is just getting ridiculous. So what's going on there in New Zealand?
Well, you know, same thing that's going in every little island chain nation. We're Fukushima irradiated and we're controlled by a ruthless criminal bankster elite.
Oh,
not entirely dissimilar to yourself.
Hey, that's wonderful. We just love it out here the same way.
It's these things that bind us together, you know?
Right. It's the way of the world, we'll just say.
Yeah. I mean, we're all Fukushima now. And I would love you to give a bit of a background about yourself, John. You've got a radio show and everything, don't you?
Yes, I've got a radio show. Is it okay to say what station I'm on and all that?
Yeah, don't feel off,
okay.
Mate.
I'm on at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Raw Radio X. It's the John Lebang Show, and it's comedy and fun and serious garbage that's going on around the world. And see the background. Been a musician most of my life. Played and done albums and all that. Did the little touring thing and decided now that I'm an older guy and you can't really be the Justin Biebers of the world anymore. So I just figured I'd get into radio and do my thing here and complain about all the wonderful things going on in Washington, D.C. and the rest of the world.
Well, I must say for my part, I'm glad you didn't become the next Justin Bieber.
Right. I'm not quite as pretty. What can I say?
Yeah. Well, at least you don't spit on people from a balcony.
No, that's kind of gross, really. You know, we don't want to do that.
Well, you know, I was just thinking about this as well. You know, like young musicians, you know, the Britney Spears and the Justin Biebers and the Miley Cyrus and all of that. They take what the music business does. It's not about music. It's about business, first of all. But what it does is it takes innocence, talent, and generally a nice person, and it turns them into this kind of almost like a demon spawn. I don't know how to describe it.
another Illuminati industry out there, really. So you're going to get the demon spawns. Look at Miley Cyrus. She went from this pretty little girl to whatever you want to call it now. I mean, she's scary.
She went from Hannah Montana to a dominatrix in less than 3 years, was it?
Yeah, I mean, with the tongue thing, I don't know, whatever she was doing and shaking her butt, and I don't know what's going on with that. Where's her parents in all this?
I don't know. Billy Ray Cyrus has probably got a broken heart right now, an achy broken heart.
Right? Does he even talk to her anymore? I mean, come on, Dad, what's going on?
Yeah, I mean, Dad, I'm turning into a super slut coke whore over here. You know, give me some pointers.
But it's all worth the money. It's just all worth the money. You know, you just want to be famous and make millions of dollars, and it's all worth the money. What can I say?
And I want to grind on penis on stage. And what we also were talking about the other day is that the music industry is so saturated now that there's no longer any super bands. Have you noticed that? There's band that everybody knows, kind of thing.
Well, that's why Black Sabbath had to come out of retirement pretty much and come out and put a great album out. I don't know if you've heard of it, the 13 album, but I mean, it's the best album I've heard in years. And you had to bring the old guys back to do it because, well, the new artists aren't worth much. If you have a chance, it says that the people in the music industry really stink and they don't know what good music is and they feed it to the rest of us. And I guess the masses enjoy that dum top dum dum stuff and oh baby shake my butt stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that. It's like every song's about love, sex, or drugs, you know. And I mean, occasionally you'll get somebody like Norah Jones who comes out, and that's really nice. It's beautiful. It's jazzy, and so on and so forth. But sure, few and far between. And I was just thinking, a bunch of friends of mine have been going to New Zealand gigs, and they are astounded, just absolutely astounded. These no name, nothing bands who have incredible music, right? Great singers and stuff like that. They ain't ever going to get on the charts. They ain't ever going to get no producer or anything like that. Nobody cares about good music anymore. And the least of all, the promoters and the record company execs.
Well, it's the entire entertainment field, I think. I mean, you get Dancing with the Stars and all that on regular television. It's just junk. Everything's junk. And, well, you know, it's to keep us dumbed down or something. I don't know. You know, that with the fluoride in the water and everything else, you know.
We truly live in the golden age of television.
Yes. And I come from the Motor City here, and we had, you know, Motown and stuff. We had great music come out of here. And there are a lot of good bands out here. But like you said, you're never going to hear about them ever. Never. Mm. So.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think it's something like there's this cryptic industry that's now starting up with the internet, I think. And the advent of the internet is the antithesis to the music industry, don't you think? Because now bands don't need a promoter or a record company or anything. They can just publish their albums online.
Yep, it's a lot different. When I was doing it, I mean, you put flyers out and you make a cassette and you go out and try to do something for yourself to try to get a record company to get it to buy into you. Well, nowadays, like you said, get a Reverb Nation, SoundCloud, you start promoting your stuff across the world, which is great. And, you know, maybe some bands will do something. I mean, I guess that's how we got Justin Bieber, didn't we? In a way, though?
Yeah.
Oh, boy, maybe it's not so good.
Yeah, hey, well, you know, every new beginning comes from some other beginnings, then said the band Semisonic. And moving on from music itself, because we've got a mind control thing. And I was just talking to a listener of mine last night. He met me at a protest for the first time a couple of weeks ago, and we were talking about trying to wake people up. And when you go to somebody and they start instantly, you know how you get that sort of recoil that I'm brainwashed and I'm going to get angry at you because you're a conspiracy theorist kind of thing. Right. Yeah, it's really hard to wake people up like that. Apparently, it takes about seven different people to tell you the same thing. before you'll actually get it. And it has to be seven different people. Like, you can't just be one person saying it seven times to the one person for them to get it. And for those who are brainwashed, I say just play your part as one of the seven, throw in an information grenade, and then later on it'll...
Hopefully it wakes them up. But you can point out chemtrails. Like the other day, we had chemtrails all over the sky, and I'm pointing them out to people, and they're like, huh? Huh? That's got to be natural, right? You know? how old are you? Did you see these things when you were growing up? I mean, when I was 12, 14 years old, we had beautiful skies. They were clear, or we had the nice puffy clouds, but we never had lines all through the sky making X's and everything. You know, you even get the nice Illuminati triangles in the sky. I think they're trying to send us a message. I don't know. Who knows?
Nobody's got freaking memory anymore. Have you noticed that?
Yeah. Yeah. And, well, you know, what are you going to do? They've been brainwashing us for, what, 50, 60 years, maybe? Even longer than that? How long's television been around?
Doing a fracking good job at any rate.
Right? Oh, sure. Yeah, I mean, and I don't know about you, but even I was asleep for a little while. I mean, each one of us comes out and we wake up eventually, or we hope each one of us do. I mean, we're still a minority, like a major minority. We're not, you know, it's not 50%. It's not 20%. I bet you we got 10% of us that are waking up. Maybe. What do you think? Is it that high?
I don't know, and I'm not sure if it matters because what we're trying to accomplish, you know, as a people who are aware of the truth, is trying to overthrow and expose the system, more or less, and restore freedom and liberty, get rid of the false taxation, get rid of the evil medical system. Dig this, man. My friend John Eisen just did the latest issue of Uncensored magazine, says, attack of the medical system. It is now the second leading cause of death in New Zealand.
Oh, really? Huh.
Right.
You got Fukushima. You got Fukushima right on the cover there.
Yeah. Fukushima.
Yeah, well, you know, that's the monster of the world right now, and hardly anybody's paying attention to that. Because we got everything else. We got the drama TV going on with Putin and Obama, and... What are we going to do? We just keep pushing the word out, and hopefully we get to people. That's all that's all I do.
Yeah. And like I say about the one in seven people, I mean, all you got to do is just play your part. You know, you'll say, look at that chemtrail. And the person will go, what? And then maybe, just maybe, a couple of other people will say the same thing to them on their way home. And then they'll be like, I'm not the only one who's been told this. I'm not the only one who thinks this. There's something going on. But ultimately, and this is what I was saying to one of my listeners last night, having a conversation at home here, I said, basically, you have to be traumatized by the system. You have to get raided by the cops, or you have to have your business taken down or something like that. You have to have officialdom. Actually, there's an old saying, how do you expose a fascist? You make them act like it.
Right.
And so one of them acts like it towards you, suddenly the fascism bubble has burst and you know what you're dealing with all of a sudden.
But, and it might
sound morbid, but I wish that every person in the world would be arrested and beaten up by the cops just once, you know, for absolutely no reason. And I can guarantee you, not a single one of them would continue their entire life as normal.
Well, I've avoided that, thank God. So I've avoided being beat up by the cops.
I mean, I wasn't beat up. I didn't need to be beaten up. But.
Yeah, it kind of sucks. They have those billy clubs and those tasers. You know, don't tase me, bro.
How many weapons does a cop need?
Well, they're all militarized now. I don't know how much you've paid attention to the terrorist attack in Boston, where or some people consider false flag, but regardless, where they just sent these militarized cops through people's homes looking for one dude, one guy they're looking for, and they covered the whole city. People with gunpoint in Humvees were all over. I get upset over that, as you can tell. So,
well, it's totally out of control, and the fact that people put up with it, it's like you understand that there's a lot of fear out there, you know, and it's justified, I believe, in a lot of ways. Cops are very scary people, okay? They lie. They push you around. They're big bullies. You know, they arrest you unlawfully. They give you tickets and so on and so forth. But now what's happening is a lot of people have just said, I've had enough. And they're finding ways to fight back. And sure enough, if you go searching on the internet, you will find templates of little things that you can send to your city council to get your parking tickets wiped or not pay your taxes or so on and so forth. All of these little methodologies, like in the free man movement, for example, are starting to come out. And I don't think that the system's very happy about that,
which is
why, incidentally, everybody that I know who has actually filed all their right of claim and so on and so forth in order to get out of the system is broke, virtually homeless, and harassed by the cops constantly. And they call that being free.
Well, you know, that if that's what it takes to be free, then that's what it takes to be free. You've got to do your part to stay, to get away from the system and fight them a little bit. Now, here in the U.S., the IRS, which is the strong arm of the government, it's almost impossible not to pay taxes anymore because they just come and take everything away. More than I've read about people who owe thousands of dollars. I mean, and I'm talking hundreds of thousands of dollars, and they didn't even make money for that, you know, income tax that they owe or the other taxes they might owe. Government just does what they want. What are you going to do? I try to make fun of it all. That's what I try to do. And that's what I do on my show is I'm trying to wake up the regular people, and I do it with comedy and all that because otherwise they don't get it if you're pushing it on them anymore. It scares them. Like you said early on, it scares them. So I try to do lighthearted stuff to try to just get them to think a little bit and go, oh, hey, let me go look that up.
Mm. See, I use the same methodology, but for the opposite purpose. I don't really feel that I'm waking people up, and I don't really feel that I have to. There's lots of people trying to. It's once you wake up and you get really freaking depressed and really freaking angry. Those are the people that I'm trying to reach out to with the comedy of this show, because, mate, waking up is so freaking traumatic. And if you don't have laughter to pull you through that darkness, I've seen it happen to a lot of people. Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week for your listening pleasure. Now, what I was saying before is before we got cut off by the break, I'm starting to get irritated with air breaks for some reason. Maybe I need a holiday. Okay, when you wake up, you get really angry and depressed, right? And I've seen this happen to a lot of truthers, is that they get angry and depressed because they're a slave and they're a victim of the system. And then they go and try and wake people up, and these other people aren't awake, and they're full-on slaves, they're full-on mind-controlled, they're full-on brainwashed, just like you used to be. And then you start, instead of seeing the bankers and the New World Order and the evil mind-control techniques and so on and so forth of the mainstream media as the enemy, you start seeing the people that you're trying to wake up who are victims of the system as the enemy. That is fracked up, man.
You
start calling them slaves and scum, and you start holding a pin on your fellow man, and you just fill yourself full of hate, and then you decide that it's not worth waking people up. There's a hell of a lot better idea just to sit around and do absolutely nothing and watch the world come to death around you and scumbaggery. And, you know, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, isn't it?
It is. And you get angry, and the only thing I can say is you have to get past that point to actually be able to wake people up. If you're, because nobody is going to take you yelling at them to get them to change. They're just not going to, they're not going to change if you're going, listen, dude, this is how it is. They're just not going to do it. You have to like break it to them softly and slowly. And honestly, I only know two people that I can even claim that I've even waken up, if you want to call it that. But hey, that to me, that's an accomplishment. Because if we each did one or two, we'd wake a whole bunch of people up, wouldn't we?
Yeah. It's like that movie, Pay It Forward.
Right.
You do one nice thing for three people, and that person does it. And sooner or later, you got the whole world waking up. And this is something that we were talking over the break, is that we don't know whether or not we're going to have some kind of a mass awakening. Based on that simple principle of you waking two people up and those two people waking two people up and so on and so forth, it's an infinitely expanding scale. A global awakening certainly is possible.
Yes. But in a global awakening, we have to stop as people wanting other people to
solve our problems.
Right. Right. It's individual responsibility and also knowing that the other individual has their own responsibilities and taking it to another level on that, I guess.
Well, I think it's like somebody says, oh, we need to solve the world's problems. Oh, the world's problems are too big for one man. And I'd say, well, you know, you're probably right. But, and we were having a conversation at a cafe the other day. I had like about half a dozen different activists who were all like really active in their own particular fields, editor of a magazine, leader of a political party, a member of a Positive Money, and a guy who's organizing a conference of experts and so on and so forth. And like, so we've got a lot of wisdom in the room. And we're having this conversation about masses, right, and whether or not it's possible to wake the masses up or so on and so forth and what everybody's responsibility is. And I said, you know what, we're actually doing it already, okay? I'm doing my job, you're doing your job, you're doing your job, you're doing your job. We're not organized, we're not together, yet we're all fighting for the same goal completely individually, and we're accomplishing it together, whether or not we're working together. Isn't that interesting?
It is.
That's the individuals kind of going at it, doing the job, and getting the frickin' job done without even needing anybody's permission, without even needing anybody's help, and automatically we win like that.
It's taking the initiative. That's the main thing. Going out there and just trying to share information, even if it doesn't work on everybody, just getting it out there, just planting seeds. Gets things rolling sometimes. And like I said, it's all about individual responsibility and taking your life into account and being responsible for all your actions and knowing that you can't force your stuff, whatever your beliefs are, whether you're Christian, whatever it might be, you can't force it on somebody else. Let them, everybody's kind of got their own truths in life. We just need to, it's all about not wanting to have power over another person. And I think that is the number one issue on the planet, is people wanting power over other people. Because then, well, control. That's what it turns into. I got to control everything. Everything's got to be my way. Oh, really? Well, I didn't know that. Thanks for telling me. I appreciate that, but I don't like your way. Your way kind of stinks, you know? But that's, hey, you go ahead and try that on me, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah. My way is Carlito's way.
Right. So what kind of coffee are you drinking there?
Just, you know, crappy instant with some filtered water and a little bit of coconut sugar.
Oh, that's good. Coconut sugar.
Yeah.
I've never had that.
Got anti-cancer properties, anti-AIDS properties, and so on and so forth. The coconut's quite an amazing food, really. And I also wanted to iterate, because what you were talking about there kind of like hit home for a moment. And what people forget is their own power, right? If you're sitting at home and you're doing nothing, then when somebody invites you out to a protest and you say, nah, it's not worth it, I'll never accomplish anything, and then you continue to sit at home doing nothing, what have you accomplished?
Not a damn thing.
Okay, so people are self-defeatist in that mode. They think that because they do nothing that they're accomplishing all and being all they can be. It's not freaking true. Why is that?
I don't know why. People... I think people are afraid in general of risk, because risk takes responsibility, and you may lose everything taking that risk. You might. And people are like their little comfort zones. And that's the way it is.
Why do people prioritize comfort? I mean, like, I know that being comfortable is good because, you know, your stress levels aren't up and so on and so forth. But when you're under stress, when you're having, like, real massive problems in your life, essentially the worst times of your life are often the source of the most valuable lessons and tools and skills that you will carry with you for the rest of your life after that bad time is over.
Right. You're right. You learn more lessons in the hard times than you do in the good times. That's for sure. The good times, you take a lot of things for granted. And when the hard times come, you can either curl up in a little ball and let it defeat you, or you face it and defeat it and learn from it. And bam, you're a better person in the end. You're a better person in the end.
LeBang. LeBang, and the dirt is gone. Because I do believe that people should actually, and I do this, actively seek out hard times, you know, actively try and challenge themselves, actively take on a project that they know that they can't win or anything like that. Try and be stressed out. Try and do all of these things. Understand, of course, that your goal is to simply be stronger, that your goal is to be a better and more skilled individual. And you know that you can't really get there without some trauma, and I really, really value the traumas in my life. I think about them all the time, you know, getting hard times with girlfriends, hard times with flatmates, friends betraying you, stuff stolen out of your house, and all of this kind of thing. Always teaches me, and I think this is why I keep revisiting all of these horrific times in my life and all these people that have messed me around, is because I haven't quite learned all of those lessons yet, and I'm seeking out to relive some of that harshness, some of that bad times, some of that real horrible sensations, so that I can actually learn something from them. Because when I'm sitting on my ass just doing the radio show and so on and so forth, and nobody's really challenging me, that's when I start to get weak, and I notice it and I realize it. It's like, wow, I haven't suffered in a couple of weeks or months or whatever. I'm starting to get too comfortable. God, please send me some suffering. Please send me some financial hardship or something like that. And that's the only time that I actually pray to God, is when I want something bad to happen to me. And my prayers are always answered. Always.
Well, I can't say I look for something bad to happen to me, but what I do is I'm always challenging myself to get to the next phase in my life, and I was brought up to always push yourself, so it's the same kind of concept, but instead of having the bad stuff always affecting me, I've always been pushing my limits, which, you know, pushing your limits, you don't have the safety net there, and then sometimes you fall. And that's where you start learning. And I don't know. My grandparents taught me a lot about that. And they came from Canada to here. And they came with nothing. And they started a business. And they thrived. And that's, I guess, the concept that I've always taken is you just got to don't be afraid of what might happen. Because once you achieve something, once you've beaten that fear, all of a sudden, man, you want to do the next big thing. And you want to keep going and keep going and keep going and fight. Next thing you know, you've knocked out 5-6 fears like that, you know.
It sounds like what my friend Penny Bright keeps telling me is you got to do one thing every day that scares you.
No, you do. Something that scares you, you know, play, you know, for some girls, it might be just touching a little spider, you know, that might scare them to death. Ooh, you know, of course I'm outside in the garden. So those things don't scare me, but, I push the limit every possible time I can, you know, you can't do it every day per se, because, you know, some days you're just worn out and we do have to take time to rejuvenate ourselves a little bit, recapture some energy, because you can't push yourself to the limit of destruction either.
Yeah, that's right. And not only do you need to have these hard times in order to teach you valuable lessons, but one of the valuable lessons that I've found is what my limits are.
Yeah. And you'll find over time you'll beat your limits once you know how to do it, because you can keep pounding this thing back and forth and not get there. And then one day you get some kind of epiphany and all of a sudden, boom, oh, why didn't I do this way before? And then boom, you whatever your that roadblock, whatever that goal was, you beat it.
Hmm. Like breakfast at Epiphany's.
There you go. The Cheerios. Do you guys have Cheerios out there? You probably do, right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Your Cheerios of I'll forget it.
That was a fail, bro.
That's the best thing about doing radio. Sometimes you run into a wall yourself and go, what the heck was I talking about?
Oh, yeah. Well, I find what happens is you've got an idea in your head, but you don't know if the other person's quite going to get it. So you're trying to explain something of the idea before you actually finish getting it out. And that's when you trip yourself out because you forget what you were going to say because you're trying to explain what you were about to say.
I'm telling you. This is definitely one of the most exciting things I've ever done as far as just being on and talking to people and just expressing ideas. And isn't that life? What life's about is ideas and trying to reach new heights and new goals. And if you're not, then you're just wasting the whole time you're here. And we're only here once, man. We're only here once. I mean, I think. Yeah. I mean,
that's a belief structure. Maybe we are, maybe we aren't. But I think what overrides whether or not you've got multiple lives is living in the moment. Because if you're not making the best out of every single moment, you're wasting your fracking time, regardless of how many lives you get to live.
Right, exactly. And it doesn't matter where you go after, if you go off to this magical land somewhere and into the universe, or you just meld away back into the earth or whatever, you know, it doesn't matter. Your one time is here. Do what you can with the best you can right now. That's all that matters.
Yeah. I mean, you got resources. I mean, there are many people out there who don't even have arms or legs or something like that. And then there's people who have got everything, who choose to do nothing with their time. And I remember what my friend Freighter X was telling me. He used to live in a kind of a resort community. He was a bit of a beach bum. And when the rich kids would come into town with their big gold MasterCards that daddy gave them and stuff like that, they don't know how to drive a car. They don't know how to tie their own shoelaces. They don't know how to cook toast. They don't know anything. Everything in their entire life has been bought and given to them, you know. And as a direct result, they become completely dependent. And this is the true spirit, I think, of the American Revolution, gaining independence. Because if you're not independent, then you're in dependence.
Right. Aren't you? And that's where we're at now in the States, is we've become a dependent society. I think it was like 48 million people are receiving some kind of assistance food-wise in the country.
It was 100 million last I checked. It was like around about 25% of the population upwards.
Yeah, well, I was going to say at least almost half the population receives some form of government, either money or assistance, whether it's Social Security, whether it's whatever it might be. I mean, that's just making you dependent. And what kind of life is that? If that's taken away from you, you're screwed. Can I say that?
Yeah, that's right. And just like the baseball clubs need to win the dependent. We'll be right back after the break at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. John LeBanc, it's French for explosion. We'll be right back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's our final segment of the first hour, and we'll have another hour after this. And then I'm going on 2 hours on somebody else's show, Stephen Hopkins, I think, or something like that. I forget. I forget. I think Stephen Hopkins was the guy who directed the Ghost in the Darkness. Probably had nothing to do with this. And my very special guest, pimp hat in hand.
Hey, baby, what's going on?
It's Joan LeBang.
Hey, what's happening?
I just wandered in during the break, and I saw you wearing your hat, and I was just like, I'll put on my hat too and just sit down. It'll be great. And I also like to have fun, you know. And it's the only rule that's actually on this show that's imposed on me by the network. You know, we have to have fun. And you know, that can actually be quite difficult sometimes, because sometimes you're feeling a bit grumpy or you know, you haven't had enough sleep or so on and so forth. Have you noticed how there's infinite amount of reasons to be unhappy and just as many reasons to be happy? And the key is what you focus on.
Well, there's all kinds of reasons to be unhappy out there, man. But, you know, you just got to focus on the good stuff, man. That's all you got to do. You know, you'd be unhappy about everything. You'd be unhappy because the dog went on the ground or something in the living room and you have to clean it up. But there's no reason to have that, man. Just be happy you didn't do it twice in the room. That's all.
If that makes sense.
Well, I was also... I think I heard it on TV or radio. I forget what it is, but whenever you feel like you got it hard, whenever you feel like you got it rough, whenever you feel like the chips are down and that life isn't worth living, just show yourself a picture of a starving African child.
Yeah, that'll do it. That'll do it for sure.
Suddenly, isn't it interesting how the suffering of others makes you feel better?
Right. Unless you're looking at National Geographics like we were kids and, you know, looking all, oh, wow, look at that. I've never seen boobs before. Wow. Hey. No. You guys do that out there? We used to do that when we were kids. That was the only way we saw boobs.
Yeah, my brother had a stack of National Geographics. I think he had like a whole bookshelf of them.
Really?
It's quite interesting, really. Nowadays, it's National Geoengineer.
Oh, right, because we need to geo-engineer the whole planet, terraform it. Why not? Maybe it's those lizard people coming from whatever planet they were talking about. I don't know. That's another one of those conspiracy things. I don't know. What are they?
The thing from planet
George
Terraform.
Bush is a lizard? What's that? I'm sorry, I missed that.
The thing from planet Terraform.
Oh, right. You know, George Bush and all that, they're all lizard people or something. I think I saw that somewhere. I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, see, even if they weren't actual lizard people, or even if they were, all right, it's still the same mentality, isn't it? It's the reptilian brain. There's no emotion. There's no. There's nothing but hate, malice, fight or flight, and deception, really. And that's just psychopathy to a T, isn't it?
That's the whole planet right now. Deception. I mean, it's hard to tell. I mean, is the truth not the hardest thing to find right now? Seriously, the truth is so hard to find because they just smash us with all this information, and unless you can pick and choose and find the like common ground in whatever they give us, and that's how I decide what's even close to the truth is I'll take all this information, any common things, I go, well, that's probably the closest thing to the truth, and everything else is political garbage or propaganda or something like that. So let me switch hats on you here, all right?
All right. Well, I find it does become difficult to discern truth from fiction because of the fact that there's so much fiction out there, and a lot of people who claim to be, you know, all for the truth and the truth movement or whatever still get sucked into it because they don't have the proper grammar to figure things out. And I don't believe I do either. I probably believe a lot of fallacious things at this point in time because, you know, it's like, let's say you take a closely guarded, personally held belief or something of that nature. Somebody comes up to you with evidence that proves that this thing that you've believed in, this thing that you've built your life on, is not true. And they've actually got real proof, real evidence to state their case. What happens then is you've got a choice. And this is the cool thing about being human, is we've got a choice. You can either get really effed off with that person for messing up your life plan, which was based on lies, or you can thank that person for sending you in a different direction of truth, despite the fact that you suddenly lose your life's purpose for a moment and you have to find a whole new one.
No, right. It takes a strong person to be able to make that change, because most people will fall back and just say, ah, you're full of whatever. You know, I'm not even going to believe it. No matter how hard that truth is smacking you in the face, they're going to go, you know, for whatever reason, I can't do it. No. But it takes a really strong and open-minded person, and that's, I think, what we lack in the world as well, is more open-mindedness about things. It takes a real strong person to be able to step out of their comfort zone and accept other facts.
You know what? I think the comfort zone in and of itself is the big lie.
Oh, sure. And that goes back to what we were talking about earlier. It's that comfort zone keeps you from pushing yourself, and it also keeps you from making yourself a better person. And from my point of view, life is all about making tomorrow better than it was today. And just if you're not trying to be a better person, what are you trying to be then? You'd be a jerk, or something.
Well, it occurs to me that whatever you're comfortable with, that's what's killing you.
And
you know?
You're one of these people, like, hey, what's going on?
I just believe what I want. I just believe what I want, and that's it. Didn't you know that? We're down here in Texas, man, and we're just going to believe in everything the Republicans say, and that's what we're going to do, and that's it, you know? We're just going to believe the Republicans. George Bush was the greatest president ever, you know, and Rick Perry, he's great, too. So, sorry.
Hey, you know, well, George Bush did bomb two less countries than Obama.
Yeah, well, you know, he didn't have drones. Because I think they were still in manufacturing production or something like that back then.
I thought that they were voting for him.
What's that?
I thought the drones were voting for him.
Maybe. Right? Actually, I think that's what happened for Obama, wasn't it? Obama. Yes, we can. Yes.
He gave us a phone. I love President Obama. He gave me a phone and free birth controls, and I'm just so happy to vote for President Obama.
That's Pepper, by the way.
Oh, drone strike.
What's that?
He's President Drone Strike at this point, isn't he? And apparently, by about 2021 or something like that, the U.S. military wants to have the majority of its military operations being done with robots. You know, drones, robotic soldiers, remote-controlled tanks, that kind of thing.
How cowardly is that to fight a war, by the way? Seriously, you can fight wars all day then, and here you go. We're just going to send you drones, and we're going to drop bombs on you. Like, that isn't cowardly. The whole military-industrial complex, Obama, the New World Order, we need to abolish those things. Get them out of here. See ya. Flush them down the toilet. Do we have a giant toilet to flush them down? Is there, you know?
Well, we've got lots of sinkholes.
See you later. What's that?
We've got lots of sinkholes.
Yeah, we got a big one in Louisiana. That thing's 44 acres wide or something like that. And one year went from like 30 feet to 44 acres. It's crazy. It's huge.
God. That's a little salt. It's actually big enough to swallow an aircraft carrier.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe Air Force One will take a landing in there, you know. Will that get me in trouble? Yeah. I don't know.
Hopefully.
If I go off screen, then they probably drone me. So, you know.
Yeah. Well, we need to sign a petition or something. You know, throw the politicians into the Louisiana sinkhole petition, you know, at whitehouse.gov.
Oh, well, you know, what's funny is, what was it, about a year ago, they had the petitions where all the states were going to secede from the union, right? And it had like a 20,000 signature, and the White House would respond. Well,
threshold, yeah.
Yeah. Well, they jacked that up to 100,000 or something like that. Oh. And they did, and they didn't respond to any of that. They said, Obama, let me be clear. All right. We're not going to respond to any of that.
You know what?
I can't imitate Obama very well. He's a tough guy to imitate, you know. He's real stiff. You ever notice?
No. What I've noticed is that the reason why he's stiff, I don't know if you've ever done an interview where you're sitting in the middle and you've got your interviewees on either side of you and you've got to constantly be looking to either side of you in order to kind of converse with them. Well, I think and you get a real stiff neck from that. It's happened to me a couple of times. I think that's the reason why Obama's so stiff is because he's got a teleprompter on one side and a teleprompter on the other side. He never makes eye contact with the audience or anything like that. It's just teleprompter this, teleprompter that. It's the Barack Obama, you know, and you can buy them for your cars. You know, you just sit there and his head bobbles from side to side with the teleprompters. And the toys are made in Kenya. You can they're available at the Vinnie Eastwood Show .com/humor page .html there. If you just Google Vinnie Eastwood humor, there's just shockingly large amounts of pictures on there. There's stuff that we've done making fun of the Prime Minister John Key and making fun of Obama. Look, if you can't make fun of people who are killing you, what the frick are you living for?
I mean, well, you got Lurch as the Secretary of State, and then Syria.
Is this John Kerry?
Well, John Kerry. I mean, Lurch. Doesn't he look like Lurch from the Adams Family?
It didn't occur to me until you said it. He got everything but the bolts in his neck.
Right.
We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com.
Anybody.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It is now hour number two, the fastest 2 hours in talk radio, broadcasting live from the fabulously Fukushima irradiated, fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the Agenda 21 experiment extraordinaire. I love this country, especially the first syllable. And my very special guest is John Lebang. It's French for explosion.
Bonjour, monsieur. Comment allez-vous?
Ça va? Non?
Bien. Oui, oui.
It's like that's what a Frenchman does when he goes to the toilet. Oui, oui. Yeah,
that's what we do on our break, too.
Yeah, actually. I just call that taking a WikiLeak. And occasionally I squeeze something out of my Julian Assange.
How is that guy doing anyways? He doesn't make the news very often anymore. He's hidden out, isn't he? He's hiding out. He's just gone.
Is he at a sex change operation, or was that somebody else, or is it becoming kind of trendy?
I don't know if he had a sex change operation. I just don't know.
I just don't know.
Well.
You see, that's what you get for having me on your show. Hey, you know, if you can't get a little bit limp-wristed from time to time, life just ain't worth living.
Right. Well, that's right. You know, it's that modern world. If we can't be all metrosexuals at one point or another, what can we be?
Yeah. Metrosexual, is that when you have sex with a building?
No, I think I don't even actually know what a metrosexual is, to be honest with you. I just know the term, you know, so I just thought I'd throw it out there, you know.
Well, see, more or less, it's kind of somebody who's relatively similar looking to me, you know, like does their hair up, uses moisturizer, has nice clothing and so on and so forth, but they've got no body hair. well shrunken testicles, and the lack of manliness and the more propensity to effeminate obsession with your appearance. That's metrosexual.
Speaking of shrunken testicles, did you hear the study by PETA that said that mothers who eat chicken wings while they're pregnant are going to end up giving their little boys small weenie wees? Did you read that? I have to send you that. Yes. Yes, I just pulled it up here. And women who eat chicken wings while pregnant give birth to boys with smaller penises, according to a shock tactic. Whatever that, I'm not sure what a shock tactic is, but
something that rhymes with shock.
Yeah, according to PETA, you get smaller wee wees if you eat chicken wings, or if mommy eats chicken wings while you're, you're baking in the oven, so to speak. So, guys, maybe it's not good to eat chicken wings. So, don't go to Buffalo Wild Wings if you want to impress your girl.
Yeah.
I'll send you the link.
Okay. I was going to make a joke in there about pedophiles or something like that. Isn't it interesting? A company, an organization like PETA that has lots of files on things, does a study about small boys' penises.
Yeah, well, you know, they're a reputable organization, don't you agree? No,
of course.
Yeah.
You know,
we have lots of reputable.
I mean, you can't study buffalo wings and small penises without being reputable. I mean, it's one of the prerequisites.
Mom, why did you eat chicken wings when you were pregnant with me? Dang it!
I gotta deal with this. I gotta deal with it my whole life, man.
I got a baby carrot now. Oh man. Anyways, that's what you get for having me on. See, we just go into weird territory here.
My girlfriend said it's like making love to a cocktail, Frank.
She left me. She left me. I ate too many chicken wings. Dang it. That's it. No more Hooters for you.
Does it specify why or what kind of chicken wings they're talking about? Or is it like a KFC chicken wings or what?
Without having to read the article really quick here, I believe it's one of the chemicals inside, a chemical found inside the bird flesh. Okay. It doesn't specify which one. I will send you this because I'm sure you'll have a good time reading it, because I actually probably laughed for a good 10 minutes while reading it. So you just disappeared on me, young man, by the way.
Yeah, I think that was actually you that just disappeared.
Really?
My camera just cut out too there. Hold on a second. Yeah, video's turned off. That's unfortunate. Oh well, I'm getting it on my regular camera anyway, so we can just reconnect and sort that out. It sometimes happens during the live broadcast where you have a little bit of technical issue like that, but sometimes it'll correct itself. But anyway, now we don't have to worry about being on camera. Well, at least you don't have to worry about being on camera for the moment, so you can take your pants off, whatever. And I was also thinking about this. Can we be serious about situations whilst also having fun with them? And I think that that's actually one of the greatest balances ever. And the person who comes to mind is somebody who was incredibly serious, yet incredibly funny and good-humoured and good-natured, was Bill Hicks. You know, he came out with some really just gold stuff that sort of exposed the New World Order agenda. In fact, one of his last gigs, he was talking about the group of people that control the world, who own all the companies and so on and so forth, not long before he died. And I don't, this. Sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, it's just when I was a young kid, I think about 20 years old or so, at university, my flatmate introduced me to Bill Hicks. I never heard him before in my entire life. You know, it's like he grew up 20 years and he never heard of Bill Hicks. And if anybody's listening here today and you've not heard of Bill Hicks, please, for the love of for frack's sake, go to YouTube and type in Bill Hicks or The Sane Man or anything. anything to do with Bill Hicks is generally pretty good. John, you can probably turn your camera back on now if you click the little camera button. It was something on my end, I'm sorry.
That's fine.
Video call malfunction.
This is officially my first Skype call ever, believe it or not.
Because of you,
I came into the 21st century. And by the way, I don't know much about Bill Hicks, so please tell us more about Bill Hicks. I would like to know.
Okay. Well, he was rising up and becoming rather Frack, what the heck is going on with my bloody computer today? It's unbelievable. All right. He was rising up and becoming really famous in the late 80s, early 90s. I think he died in 1994 at age 32, I think, or 33. And he, at the time, was becoming one of the greatest comedians, and in my opinion still is, probably the greatest comedian who ever lived. And he talked about the Iraq War, and this is how he described the Iraq War. There was never a war. We go, well, how can you say that, Bill? Well, a war is when two armies are fighting each other. So you see right there, there was never really a war. And the other things about philosophy that he really got down. He Kevin Booth, American Drug War, the documentary.
No, I'm sorry, not familiar with him either.
Okay,
hey, I'm out of the loop.
Well, they were good friends back in the day, and they did this mushroom trip together, and Bill Hicks and one of his other friends who was there, they heard this voice, and it said, death is an illusion. Reality is not what it seems. And we are the imagination of ourselves. And they turned to each other and they both heard it. They'd both heard it. They were tripping balls on mushrooms and they both heard this exact same voice in their head. They had a deeply profound spiritual awakening. And when Bill Hicks ended his comedy sketches, he kind of ended like this, like the world is like an amusement park. It's got thrills and chills, it's very brightly colored, and it's very loud, and it's fun for a while. And some people have been on this ride for a long time, and they think that it's real. And when somebody comes along and reminds them, no, this is just a ride, they say, well, this has to be real. Look at my bank account and my family. This has to be real. And he goes, no, it's not real. It's just a ride, and we can change it anytime we choose to. It's only a choice between fear and love. And that's
profound.
It.
Profound. Yeah, it's profound.
Oh, and that's only the half of it. You know, I can't. I used to listen to Bill Hicks so much, I was able to recite entire kind of hour-long sketches of his, but haven't kept up with the repetition in order to keep that up there. But yeah, he's that good, and he tells a lot of profound things that sort of were key to my awakening as a person. I mean, I'm not a comedian per se. I like to tell a few jokes and make people laugh here and there, but at the end of the day, I'm actually a really serious person, and in general, I'm very, very angry all the time at things. And Bill Hicks was also very angry, but he had these deep ways of really understanding what things were truly about and not letting it get to him.
That's interesting.
I think it's profound lessons for all of us contained within his comedy. And I believe that people actually, it should be kind of like required listening. You know how in school they had required reading, required viewing, and so on and so forth.
Yeah,
you know?
Required propaganda, but I understand what you're saying.
And I think that it's counterintuitive because you have a look at, say, the politicians speaking and so on and so forth. They're not funny. They're not funny, are they? You know, when George Bush or Barack Obama are trying to like do these speeches at these comedy roasts or whatever, they're just not funny, you know, because they're psychopaths.
Right.
I wouldn't know a good joke of hitting them in the face.
They are a joke, and it's not a funny joke at all. It's a very serious joke, these people. And what you're saying earlier with with love and all that. We need more of that. People just do not know how to show love to each other anymore. You say you have this anger in you, but it seems to me you use it in a constructive way and to show love at times. Well, with these guys running the world, I don't think they ever were loved. Maybe they were abused as children. Maybe, who knows what they, but all they know is hate. And they can preach their little love stuff, or they don't really preach love. I don't even know what to call what they preach, but
it's called scumbaggery.
Hate. Scumbaggery, yes. Scumbaggery, perfect way to put it, yep. And there's a lot of scumbags out there.
Yeah, I do believe that this is the case. Because I've talked to a lot of politicians, you know, high up politicians, you know, personally I've spoken to them. And they don't get higher up if they're an honest, decent person, really. And if they are, they don't last long. I've seen so many honest, decent politicians lose their seats in Parliament to complete psychos. And I've seen a lot of psychos get all the way to the top and go even further. You know, like we had a former Prime Minister, Helen Clark, who's the Labor Party head, and she was more or less the driving force and controlling factor of that party for like 20 years, right? No ideas basically got through the party without her say-so. And so when she becomes the Prime Minister, she implements a whole bunch of draconian policies. She tried to make incandescent light bulbs illegal to force people to have energy-saver light bulbs with the mercury in them. She tried to force people to ban vitamins and have them regulated by a pharmaceutical company. So well, that only pharmaceutical companies.
Isn't that Agenda 21, basically?
No, it's Codex Alimentarius. But
I'm sorry. Yes, my bad. Codex Alimentarius, great.
And so naturally, dig this, you know, because Codex Alimentarius and Agenda 21 are at the UN, right? And so guess what job she gets after becoming the Prime Minister of New Zealand for 9 years? She becomes head of the UN Development Fund. The third highest position in the UN with a $9 billion budget. And it's like, whoa. So suddenly the international aspect starts to come into full fruition and view, and you realize what happens when you're a psycho, when you're willing to lie, cheat, deceive, and basically have no qualms about people dying because of your actions, you get more promotions than you can freaking handle. If you're a good person, on the other hand, if you always tell the truth, if you always try to help people, if you always try to be the salvation of humanity, you get assassinated.
Sure.
You notice that? Sure.
Yep. That's how it works in all endeavors of mankind now. And that's based out of the secret societies. That's how they get promotions and stuff. And that's, I guess, the dirty, rotten people are more trustworthy to the agenda than, or like you say, scumbags are more trustworthy to the agenda than good people who would break the agenda or would try to fight it. And Washington, D.C., what you were talking about later or earlier, where people get into government and then they, even if they're good, they go bad when they get there. It's like a disease. In D.C., I mean, I've gone there. You can just feel the filth. It's such a beautiful city. It's like Rome, right? It's just beautiful city, but it feels so filthy there.
Well, the city is planned on the outlay of a giant pentagram.
Oh, of course, right, you know.
And it does have a giant Masonic penis pillar in the middle, drawing down Luciferian energy from the sky, according to Freemasonic beliefs. It does have the largest amount per square foot of Masonic lodges out of any city in the world, I think.
I think you are correct. I think you are correct on that.
You know, so you walk into a place, you've got evil coming down from the sky, evil on the floor plan, and evil everywhere you look. If you're a sensitive person, you can feel that. You can, it's actually palpable. You can really, truly feel it. I remember when I got arrested for the first time, I felt that when I walked into the police station, into the cells. And I don't think it was the criminals. in the cells that were the product of that evil. I think it was the cops who ran the place. We'll be right back after the break at the Vinnie Eastwood Show. com. Ladies and gentlemen, John LeBang is French for explosion. We'll be right back.
Ladies and gentlemen, do me a favor, smash the television and burn the newspaper. That shit will never tell you that the president's a traitor. Believe what you want, but my evidence is greater. What you know about the Bilderberg and New World Order? What you know about the real fluoride in your water? What you know about the bleeding uranium in the mortar? What you know about APAC controlling the report?
Welcome back. With the world, people kill people. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week for your listening pleasure. And we were speaking over the break about cliches. You know how some people are just like so obviously cliche, like you go to a death metal Satanist band concert or whatever, and surprisingly enough, everybody is really, really pasty, hasn't seen light in like 7 years, and has all of these different attire, you know, like big black boots, black jackets, dog collars, so on and so forth. And you think to yourself, man, these people are a cliche. Do they know? Do they realize that they're a cliche? No. And they don't. Because they never question. You know, they're just walking around and you're like, hold on a second. I've got black boots on, a black coat, and I'm really pasty, and I'm wearing makeup, and I'm really depressed. Oh my God, I'm a cliche.
Metal man, come on, metal man. Hey.
You know, metal man, like on Wizard of Oz. And the thing is, they don't question their own existence. They don't question who it is they are and what it is that they're doing. And it's the philosophy of the cosmic schmuck. Cosmic meaning big, schmuck meaning idiot. If you never question to yourself, you know, am I the cosmic schmuck? Then it's quite likely that you are. If you're constantly questioning, you know, am I becoming the cosmic schmuck here? Then it's very unlikely you'll actually turn into one, all right? And it's that self-analysis, that kind of thing that keeps you at bay. Even Julius Caesar, I think, he had no men. You know, most leaders nowadays, they're surrounded by yes men. Julius Caesar allegedly surrounded himself with no men to tell him, no, you're stepping over the bounds, you're doing this wrong, you're doing that wrong, and to keep him down to earth so he wouldn't become corrupted. And unfortunately, it didn't work, allegedly. This is the interesting thing, is because not only do you need to do a whole lot of self-analysis, a constant revisiting. Have I gone insane? Am I getting too angry? Am I becoming too full of myself? These are the very important questions that people often don't ask because they fear that the answer might be yes.
Are you talking about Obama?
Well, I guess it's an archetype, really. It's right. Everywhere.
Right, right. But, you know. I mean, I understand what you're saying, and it's true. If you don't question what you're doing and who you are all the time, you're definitely going to get full of yourself. You're gonna get big egoed, and you're gonna think you're your stuff doesn't stink. You know, you're just gonna be all, hey man, I'm the coolest in the world, and everybody loves me, and that's the way it is. And if you don't love me, you don't know what you're talking about. You're a jerk because I'm the best thing on the planet. Yeah, baby. Huh. Sorry. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think you should have been wearing the pimp hat when you said that. Here we go. It's going to be working.
Yeah, baby. Hey, I'm the coolest thing on the planet, baby. Hey, whoa, wait, let me turn it because that looks, there we go. Where's my feather? There's no feather. I don't know. There was a feather on here at one time. So
anyways, man, what are you doing over there? We're having a good time over here on the radio. And we're, you know, and I'm full of myself. Didn't you know that?
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to go down to Washington, D.C. and change the whole world. Yeah, just like that. And then everybody's going to love me. And then nobody's going to like me.
Yeah. Well, you know, what's surprising, though, is if you go out there and you try to make everybody love you and you're not a completely manipulative psychopath, people won't love you. If you are, on the other hand, somebody who feels nothing for others and is adept at telling them what they want to hear and manipulating them and enchanting them. They will love you, but they won't realize who you really are and what you're really doing, because not only do they not question that about themselves, they don't question that about you either, do they?
Yes, we can.
So many blind followers, man. And see, the only people who got change from Obama are the homeless.
No, I got change. I got like 25 cents left, something like that. I don't know. I don't have much. I don't have any bills left, but I got change. I got quarters and stuff like that, you know, nickels.
Oh, don't worry. Pennies. I'm sure you'll have some bills soon, man. They'll be in the mail.
Isn't that what he meant is we'd all have like change in our hands, right? He didn't mean anything else, right? Because it hasn't changed.
Here's the thing. I really hate that word. You know why? Because every single fracking time that there is a political stoush or campaign, every single fracking person uses that same fracking motto every single time. It's unbelievable. Okay, so you got... Let me just calm down for a second here. All right, crack it. I'm not going to be calm. No, I'm not going to be calm. I'm not going to be calm. Okay, 2008. We've been under Labor government for 9 years in New Zealand. Okay, they've done a whole bunch of draconian stuff, full-on nanny state, right? What does the National Party, the Blue Party, campaign on? We campaign on change. 2008, George Bush been in power for 8 years. Number of illegal wars, illegal wiretaps, warrantless searches and stuff like that on U.S. citizens. Barack Obama comes out, and what does he campaign on? Change. And then this year, Australian election, been under a Labor government for like 8 years or something like that. Then Tony Abbott comes out and tries to run against the current Prime Minister, Tony Rudd. What's his campaign pledge again?
Change. That's right.
Change. So it doesn't and the people before them, okay? George Bush promised change. George W. Bush promised change after from Bill Clinton, and so on and so forth, all the way down the track. Everybody's voting for change. Isn't that interesting? And they never fracking get it, yet they keep fracking fighting for it.
It's the same thing as using the word progress. I hate that word like you hate change, because guess what? Cancer progresses, and that isn't good. Why do you think other governmental progress would be good for any of us? Now that would make that makes me scream. I hate the word progress, and of course the ultimate word, comprehensive. You know, when they're using comprehensive, you're getting screwed every which way you possibly can.
Yeah,
it was comprehensive. Oh great, thanks. I really needed that. Oh, you just bounced up over there. Hey, I just fell away there for just a minute.
Hey, what's up? Hey, what's going on?
That sounds like your comprehensive voice.
Yeah, that's my comprehensive voice. We're going to make comprehensive change here in the United States, and that means everybody's going to have health care, but your taxes are going to go up. And guess what? You know, it's just change, you know? And I know how Vinny likes change very much over there. And so, like, it's a comprehensive change, and my phone keeps ringing, so I'm going to shut the damn thing off. And, you know, it's just comprehensive change, and that means you're totally getting screwed in every way possible. Can I say screwed?
That's the case. That's the case, isn't it? Every single time we want change, it's change for the worse. Every time we want something comprehensive, it's incomprehensible.
Right. Comprehensive just means you're going to get it every way possible, and it's never going to be good. And do you ever notice, this is my biggest problem, I'm not sure how many parties are in New Zealand, but we're going to take the states. We have the two major parties. When they agree on something, we know the people are going to get hosed big time here in the United States. If both sides are agreeing on something, that's it, folks. It's done. You bend over. It's coming out your wallet and in back through somewhere else. We'll just leave it at that.
It is the case. Now, can you get disillusioned with politics to the point where you no longer want to participate in it? What's the voting turnout in the United States now? Like 15%, 20%, 30% maybe?
It's not much.
It's ridiculous.
Yep, and that's part of the problem is people not being engaged. They just give up. And one of those people I talked about waking up earlier on, they are talking about giving up on the whole thing, not voting anymore. And I'm like, that's not what I was trying to get to you. I'm just saying you can't, just because somebody has a D in front of their name doesn't mean they're for what they claim they're for. And just because they have an R in front of the name doesn't mean they're conservative. That's another the whole liberal conservative thing. It's ridiculous. Tell me what is so liberal about protecting the environment. Really, the word liberal means, you know, if I'm spending my money liberally, what am I doing? I'm throwing it out, right? So you should be all for drilling and all this if you're liberal, right? Now, if you're conservative, you should be for less. I mean, that's what conservative means. Not spending, not getting in there. It's like nobody understands even the words anymore. And that's a big problem right now, is people don't even know definitions of words anymore. I'm conservative. Oh, really? Bombing the hell out of Iraq is conservative. Really? Okay. Well, wow. I didn't know that. See, I feel I'm more
getting the country into monstrumental amounts of debt. That's conservative.
Oh, yeah, sure. Right. Yeah. Well, I think we're at 17 trillion, what they say on the books, even though I just read something that
several quadrillion.
Right. Right. Well, if you're counting the Federal Reserve, you know, and what we might owe them for every dollar they've ever printed. I mean, it's there's probably not a computer that can add up all those numbers in the world.
Yeah. Well, see, people have been dumbed down. And this is something that people need to realize. You're dumb. Okay. No, seriously, I don't mean this as an insult. Just try and realize the simple, obvious truth. You've been living in a system your entire life that inexorably makes you dumb. Okay, just imagine for a moment that you realize that I'm freaking stupid. I'm so dumb that I don't know how dumb I really am. Once you come to that realization, only then will you start to become a little bit more intelligent, because then you know you've got a problem that you need to work on.
Right. And I always say, listen, I don't know anything. I just ask questions. I don't have answers to anything out there in the world. It's hard to find an answer to fix every little problem. But I have a lot of questions. And I bet when you ask these questions to the right people, they can't answer them. Or they give you those shuck and jive kind of like things Obama will give you or Bush gives you. You know, I'm not sure what a good term is for it, but they just give you the
BS.
BS. Okay, sure. You know, they just give you the BS statement and say, hey, you know, that's what you get. And people eat the BS. They grab it on big plates, pour it on there. Get some gravy, maybe some salt and pepper, because sometimes, you know, it's a little, you know, it needs flavor. And then you eat the BS up. Hey, and that's healthy for you. Didn't you know that? BS is healthy for you. It's the best. It's great for you that you trust all these guys in Washington. Hey, and they'll feed you BS. And it's always been that way. When has a politician not fed you BS? I can't, Kennedy was pretty good, you know, at times. But I mean, right? But really, that's the dish they serve the country. Here's a nice heaping plate of BS for you. Enjoy it. And if you want more, we can give it to you.
They don't even serve it to you on a plate, man. There's a trough.
Okay, sure. Right.
Yeah. And the mainstream media fills the trough every day from a big hose that's connected to a tank full of BS. And that's what the public are always feeding out of. You know, you come to the trough, and before you know it, you're fat, you're dumb, you're lazy, and you're apathetic. And then they frickin' gotcha.
Yeah, nowhere else to go then.
You'll never change anything, let alone yourself. And if you want to change anything, that's the first thing you have to change.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you 100%. And the media is probably the biggest problem on the planet, because they are supposed to be the ones that keep everybody in check, to keep the governments in check. And forget about it.
They're getting it. They're not doing it because they're getting a check from the government.
Right. You got CNN faking coverage of places they're at, like Tel Aviv, but it's a green screen room, and he's sitting there. What's his name? Anderson Crapper or Cooper or
Anderson
whatever.
Anderson Cooper, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And he's sitting there in front of a green screen and acting like he's in Tel Aviv. Well, if they're going to go that far to BS, you know everything else has got to be BS along with it.
Yeah. Viva la Tel Aviv. You know, it is quite sad. And as a media guy myself, it's the reason why I started doing what I'm doing is because I realized that me, by myself, with no training, no credibility, no plan, no suit, no frickin' nothing, I'm overqualified to be a member of the media.
But if you're here in the U.S., they're trying to classify who is part of the media. I forgot which senator was talking about. Maybe it was John McCain, you know, the warmonger guy or whatever. But they were talking about specifically who is actual media or not. And you know who they're picking as the media. You and I are not going to be considered media at all. We're troublemakers or whatever might be. But it's, you know, you get the Anderson Coopers or what's his name? Hannity might be considered a media guy. What's it? Sean Hannity, dude, you know.
Hannity, who looks like a manatee.
Yeah, man. He's another one that's very close. He's a little more like Frankenstein than he is Lurch, but he's... Oh.
Yeah, we are coming to a break. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, after this short commercial break. Final segment coming up with John Lebang. Back in a minute. Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's my final segment with Jean LeBlanc.
Comment allez-vous?
He's kind of like Matt LeBlanc, except he's Jean LeBlanc. Now, you have a website?
Yes, it's www.jlebang.com. That's J-L-E-B-A-N-G.com. And that has all kind of my music on there and my shows on there and the replays anyways. And all kinds. I do a little morning show on YouTube called The Daily Brew, and that covers all the daily headlines that happen and many other little tidbits on there that might interest people.
Surely not all the headlines, but some of them.
Oh, right. Not all the headlines. I'm not the Drudge Report or anything.
But it would be cool to actually... I don't know about you, but I've got a real anger at the media kind of thing. Like, I've got a grudge against them. And I was just thinking, you know, we have a website, The Grudge Report, where you basically you just sit there and you rip seven colors of Shiite Muslim out of the media.
Sure.
And these media people. In fact, I was got a message back from Ian Wishart the other day. He's a guy who wrote Aircon, how the global warming thing and the New World Order. He was one of New Zealand's most credible journalists. You know, he's the host of the Sunday program, our equivalent of 60 Minutes. In fact, we also have 60 Minutes. But he had assassination attempts on his life because he was uncovering some real hardcore like banking scumbaggery and stuff like that. And so he just like quit the media totally. Started going independent, writing his own books, publishing his own magazine, his own material, and everything like that. He's like fracked the media. And he told me during the interview what journalists are actually really like. And he says, you know, point blank, they're airheads. They're actually just freaking idiots in suits. They look real nice. And they're freaking stupid, and they just repeat BS. You know, that's all they are. And yet, here's the thing that really frustrates me. Activists, you know, activists who are aligned with, say, my mode of thinking, they try and court the media, right? And I'm just thinking, how long does it take, and what does it take, before you start to realize that the media aren't worth your attention? And even if they did give you some attention, it wouldn't be enough. And it wouldn't be in any way truthful, honest, 100%. Boom, you know. Then again, if you refuse all media coverage, then you become a pariah, don't you? So there's this balancing act. Because I had, I've had two journalists in this studio interview me and put me in their newspapers and so on and so forth, riddled with inaccuracy, mind you. And I could see that they weren't, you know, totally all there in terms of my mode of thinking, i.e., truth, honor, discipline, respect, challenging yourself, that that kind of thing. Like they're not quite there yet. You know how when you meet somebody and you realize that they're not quite grown up?
You mean half the American public?
90% of the American public.
Okay, sure. All right. I was trying to give some people the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, I don't think we should give anybody the benefit of the doubt anymore. And speaking of which, it's funny you should mention that, because I was just thinking that this morning when I woke up. It's like giving politicians the benefit of the doubt, giving the government the benefit of doubt. Why am I thinking about that? And here's the thing. How long do you have to give somebody the benefit of the doubt before you start doubting them because they've completely betrayed the benefit?
In 2013, we should be, most of us should be there by now, don't you think?
Mm.
We should, there should be no benefit of the doubt anymore with politicians, especially the media. With the media, I take in as much as I can, and all I do is I siphon it down to what the common things are, and everything else to me is BS. Because you get this right, left, and all this, but when something concurs, that's probably at least close to the truth. That you kind of get out of this left right paradigm thing, and then you if both sides are reporting this one little tidbit that's the same, then you could probably say, okay, that's probably close to the truth. The other stuff is BS, don't you think? I mean,
I don't know. I think it's the opposite way around. When I see two, like we've really only got two news channels here, TV1 and TV3, network news. And what's interesting is you can flip between them. The head story is the exact same. Second story is the exact same. Third story is the exact same. Fourth story is the exact same. And then you switch over to Prime News, you know, sort of a little over to the side. First story is the exact same. Second story is the exact same. And then you go to Māori News, you know, like native Māori New Zealander news. It's done in the Māori language.
Okay.
First story is the same. Second story is the same. Third story is the same. Then you look up, then you listen to the radio. First story is the same. Second story is the same. They're all reporting the exact same freaking thing. Okay, and this reminds me of something a listener of mine, Vincent, who I respect gratefully. He defended me a lot on Facebook the other day from somebody trying to defame me. And he said to me, you know how we cover our shows with a bit of comedy, John, right?
Right.
And he says, like, Vinny, why don't you just try and be a bit more serious or whatever? And I go, well, maybe you don't understand what you're asking of me. Can you name me one other radio show host in New Zealand that manages their show with a degree of comedy of that perspective? And he's like, no, I can't. So what you're really asking me is, Vinny, why can't you be exactly like everybody else?
Vinny, why can't you? Because you don't want to, do you? You want to separate yourself from the crowd because, well, that gives you some integrity, right? Don't you think?
I don't know. It's almost like I'm 6 foot four, so I stand out in a crowd anyway.
Sure.
I mean,
you're pretty tall.
I can't be anything else but what I am.
Right. No, I agree. I mean, that's the same with me. I do my thing. I have my little skits on my show and that's what I do. And I can't be like anybody else because, well, I'm John and that's who I am. And if you don't like it, hey, there's talk shows all over the place. I mean, it's the world of talk shows now, is it not? I mean, it's unbelievable the amount, but I mean, it's great because we have the internet and it's gotten off this terrestrial radio type thing. But if you're not yourself, you're just somebody else. And what good is that?
Yeah. I mean, how many of this, Okay, so just think about this for a moment, ladies and gentlemen. When was the last time you had a totally original thought? Oh, it's been a long time, hasn't it? Yeah. And don't you think that there's something inherently wrong with that? That original thoughts aren't coming fast and hard all day, every day? Your inventions, your ability to think, create, so on and so forth. There's a reason why that part of you has been diminished into almost nothingness. It's because we're absorbing everybody else's ideas. Even right now, you're absorbing my ideas, my thoughts, my talking, my thinking here. You're not doing it for yourself. And the way that I've kind of come to grips with this is you say, this person says that, I'll assume for a moment that they don't have any credibility. Now think about what I think about that. What do I actually think about that? Can I deconstruct it? Do I know the origin of these words? Have they been spoken before throughout humanity? You know the old saying that there's nothing new under the sun? I think that that holds to be true. There really isn't a whole lot of originality out there. And even less so now because we have mass media, mass entertainment, mass this, mass that, mass the other, that individuality has slipped hard, okay? Like, you know how sometimes you slip and you graze your knee? This isn't one of those moments. This is the time when you slip and you fall downstairs and you break your spine in like six places and you need like several titanium screws in order to pull yourself back together. That's the condition of individuality now. We've been indoctrinated for a long freaking time to destroy our creativity, to destroy our originality, to make us in the image of something that is not ourselves.
Well, that's kind of the agenda of the New World Order, isn't it? Not one amalgamation, is that the word, of people that everybody thinks alike, does the same thing. It's the, like you said, the destruction of individuality. And I don't know how to get us away from that. I mean, it's been so long, you see it every day. So all I can, it's the question of the ages. How do we get back to being individuals?
Well, it's easy. You have a look at whatever's going down now and do the direct opposite.
Oh, okay? Sure.
Everybody going to a Justin Bieber concert. Don't go to the freaking concert. Go to a rockabilly club or something of that nature. Everybody watching mainstream media, don't watch mainstream media. Listen to the Vinnie Eastwood show.
There you go.
Listen to the John LeBang show. Everybody's going to see this new movie that's come out with Matt Damon called Elysium or whatever. Don't go see that movie. Go see an independent artistic film or something of that nature. Or go through archives of online, uploaded, illegally downloaded frickin' movies or whatever and watch something from the 50s or the 80s or the 1960s version of the Manchurian Candidate or something like that. Do the exact opposite of everything that everybody else is doing. Everybody else poisoning themselves with fast food? Buy organic. Everybody else is drinking fluoridated water? Buy filtered water, so on and so forth. It's so easy to release the power of the individual. You just got to realize that you're not like everybody else. John, thank you very much for coming on the show with me today. And we've got about maybe 20 seconds here for some final words of wisdom and your website.
JLeBang.com again. And listen to the Vinnie Eastwood show all the time because it's awesome. I've been listening for, you know, here and there for about a week. And I don't have many words of wisdom outside of saying, just think for yourself.
We'll be right back again sometime, ladies and gentlemen.